We're starting chapter 45 of Pride and Prejudice. Convinced, as Elizabeth was now, that Miss Bingley's dislike of her had originated in jealousy, she could not help feeling how unwelcome her appearance at Pemberley must be to her, and was curious to know with how much civility on that lady's side the acquaintance would now be renewed. On reaching the house, they were shown through the hall into the saloon, whose northern aspect rendered it delightful for summer.
Is it saloon or salon?
Saloon.
Two O's. Wow.
You got a problem with two O's?
Yeah, I've never heard of that in a house. I only heard of it in the Old West.
Wow, Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
Its windows open to the ground. Admitted a most refreshing view of the high woody hills behind the house, and of the beautiful oaks and Spanish chestnuts which were scattered over the intermediate lawn. In this house they were received by Miss Darcy, who was sitting there with Mrs. Hurst and Miss Bingley, and the lady with whom she lived in London. Georgiana's reception of them was very civil, but attended with all the embarrassment which, though proceeding from shyness and the fear of doing wrong, would easily give to those who felt themselves inferior the belief of her being proud and reserved. Mrs. Gardiner and her niece, however, did her justice and pitied her. By Mrs. Hurst and Miss Bingley, they were noticed only by a courtesy, and on their being seated, a pause, awkward as such pauses must always be, succeeded for a few moments. It was first broken by Mrs. Annesley, a genteel, agreeable-looking woman, whose endeavor to introduce some kind of discourse proved her to be more truly well-bred than either of the others, and between her and Mrs. Gardiner, with occasional help from Elizabeth, the conversation carried on. Miss Darcy looked as if she wished for courage enough to join in it, and sometimes did venture a short sentence when there was least danger of its being heard. Elizabeth soon saw that she was herself closely watched by Miss Bingley, and that she could not speak a word, especially to Miss Darcy, without calling her attention. This observation would not have prevented her from trying to talk to the latter, had they not been seated at an inconvenient distance, but she was not sorry to be spared the necessity of saying much. Her own thoughts were employing her. She expected every moment that some of the gentlemen would enter the room. She feared that the master of the house might be amongst them, and whether she wished or feared it most, she could scarcely determine. Where do you think she wished and feared?
In her heart.
In her heart. In her heart of hearts?
Yeah.
Fair enough. It's a very interesting place for her heart. Where were we?
With our minds in the gutter and not, respectively.
You don't think Mr. Darcy deserves that kind of imagination?
Jesse, this is Jane Austen.
Yeah, there's no raciness in Jane Austen.
There's not. Well, we haven't gotten to it yet.
Oh, is there going to be?
A little bit.
This, here. After sitting in this manner a quarter of an hour, without hearing Miss Bingley's voice, Elizabeth was roused by receiving from her a cold inquiry after the health of her family. She answered with equal indifference and brevity, and the other said no more. The next variation which their visit afforded was produced by the entrance of servants with cold meat, cake, and a variety of all the finest fruits in season. But this did not take place till after many a significant look and smile from Mrs. Annesley to Miss Darcy had been given to remind her of her post. There was now employment for the whole party, for though they could not all talk, they could all eat, and the beautiful pyramids of grapes, nectarines, and peaches soon collected them round the table. That sounds really good.
I know.
I want grapes, nectarines, and peaches.
Right now?
Yeah.
I want a nectarine.
There were some nectarines at the store, but they didn't look super good.
Yeah, they're not in season yet.
It's the very beginning of the season, so.
Yeah. But grapes would probably be good.
Yeah, I got some grapes.
Okay.
While thus engaged, Elizabeth had a fair opportunity of deciding whether she most feared or wished for the appearance of Mr. Darcy by the feelings which prevailed on his entering the room. And then, though but a moment before she had believed her wishes to predominate, she began to regret that he came. He had been some time with Mr. Gardiner, who, with two or three other gentlemen from the house, was engaged by the river, and had left him only on learning that the ladies of the family intended a visit to Georgiana that morning. No sooner did he appear than Elizabeth wisely resolved to be perfectly easy and unembarrassed, a resolution the more necessary to be made, but perhaps not the more easily kept, because she saw that the suspicion of the whole party were awakened against them, and that there was scarcely an eye which did not watch his behavior when he first came into the room. In no countenance was attentive curiosity so strongly marked as in Miss Bingley's, in spite of the smiles which overspread her face whenever she spoke to one of its objects, for jealousy had not yet made her desperate, and her attentions to Mr. Darcy were by no means over. Miss Darcy, on her brother's entrance, exerted herself much more to talk, and Elizabeth saw that he was anxious for his sister and herself to get acquainted, forward as much as possible, every attempt at conversation on either side. Miss Bingley saw all this likewise, and in the imprudence of anger took the first opportunity of saying, with sneering civility, "Pray, Miss Eliza, are you not the shire militia removed from Meryton? Are not the militia removed from Meryton? They must be a great loss to your family." In Darcy's presence, she dared not mention Wickham's name, but Elizabeth instantly comprehended that he was uppermost in her thoughts, and the various recollections connected with him gave her a moment's distress, but exerting herself vigorously to repel the ill-natured attack, she presently answered the question in a tolerably detached tone. While she spoke, an involuntary glance showed her Darcy, with a heightened complexion, earnestly looking at her, and his sister overcome with confusion and unable to lift up her eyes. Had Miss Bingley known what pain she was then giving her beloved friend, she undoubtedly would have refrained from the hint, but she had merely intended to discompose Elizabeth by bringing forward the idea of a man to whom she believed her partial, to make her betray a sensibility which might injure her in Darcy's opinion, and perhaps to remind the latter of all the follies and absurdities by which some part of her family were connected to the core. Not a syllable ever reached her of Miss Darcy's meditated elopement. To no creature had it been revealed where secrecy was possible, except to Elizabeth, and from all Bingley's connections, her brother was particularly anxious to conceal it, from the very wish which Elizabeth had long ago attributed to him of their becoming hereafter her own. He had certainly formed such a plan, and without meaning that it should affect his endeavor to separate him from Miss Bennet, it is probable that it might add something to his lively concern for the welfare of his friend. Elizabeth's collected behavior, however, soon quieted his emotion, and Miss Bingley, vexed and disappointed, dared not approach nearer to Wickham. Georgiana also recovered in time, though not enough to be able to speak any more. Her brother, whose eyes she feared to meet, scarcely recollected her interest in the affair, and the very circumstance which had been designed to turn his thoughts from Elizabeth seemed to have fixed them on her more and more cheerfully. Their visit did not continue long after the question and answer above mentioned, and while Mr. Darcy was attending to them to their carriage, Miss Bingley was venting her feelings and criticisms on Elizabeth's person, behavior, and dress. But Georgiana would not join her. Her brother's recommendation was enough to ensure her favor. His judgment could not err, and he had spoken in such terms of Elizabeth as to leave Georgiana without the power of finding her otherwise than lovely and amiable. When Darcy returned to the saloon, Miss Bingley could not help repeating to him some part of what she had been saying to his sister. "How very ill Miss Eliza Bennet looks this morning, Mr. Darcy," she cried. "I never in my life saw anyone so much altered as she is the winter. She's grown so brown and coarse. Louisa and I were agreeing that we should not have known her again." However little Mr. Darcy might have liked such an address, he contented himself with coolly replying that he perceived no alteration than her being rather tanned, no miraculous consequence of traveling in the summer. For my own part, she rejoined, I must confess that I can never see any beauty in her. Her face is too thin, her complexion has no brilliancy, and her features are not all that handsome. Her nose wants character, there is nothing marked in its lines. Her teeth are tolerable, but not out of the common way. And as for her eyes, which have sometimes been so called so fine, I can never see anything extraordinary in them. They have a sharp, shrewish look, which I do not like at all, and in her air altogether there is self-sufficiency without fashion, which is intolerable. Why is she being such a jerk?
She's jealous.
I know, but she's really talking it up now.
Sorry.
Like...
Yeah, she's not supposed to be. We're not supposed to like her.
I know, but she's really... She was, like, faking it better before.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's not even trying.
Yeah.
Persuaded, as Miss Bingley was, that Darcy admired Elizabeth, this was not the best method of recommending herself. But angry people are not always wise, and in seeing him at last look somewhat nettled, she had all the success she expected. He was resolutely silent, however, and from a determination to make him speak, she continued. I remember, when we first knew her in Hertfordshire, how amazed we were to find that she was a reputed beauty, and I particularly recollect you saying one night, after they'd been dining at Netherfield, she a beauty. I should as soon call her mother a wit. But afterwards she seemed to improve on you, and I believe you thought her rather pretty at one time. Yes, replied Darcy, who could contain himself no longer. But that was only when I first saw her, and it is many months since I have considered her as one of the handsomest women on my acquaintance. He then went away, and Miss Bingley was left to all the satisfaction of having forced him to say what gave no one any pain but herself. Mrs. Gardiner and Elizabeth talked of all that had occurred during their visit as they returned, except what had particularly interested them both. The look and behavior of everybody they had seen were discussed, except of the person who had mostly engaged their attention. They talked of his sister, his friends, his house, his fruit, of everything but himself. Yet Elizabeth was longing to know what Mrs. Gardiner thought of him, and Mrs. Gardiner would have been highly gratified by her niece beginning the subject. What are you doing?
I'm kissing your hand.
Oh. And that's the end of chapter 45.
Do you think when you saw me, you thought it was just tolerable?
Tolerable at best.
At best?
Yep.
Did I improve on you?
You improved. No, of course. I thought you were gorgeous when I first saw you. I was like, sweet. There's a hottie in the class.
I felt bad for Elizabeth that Darcy thought bad about her.
Yeah, like, I know.
That's weird.
Well, you know. He was not looking for anything.
I thought you were going to read more.
It's 12:15. Can we read in the morning? It helps. Sometimes we can still go to sleep. You have to take a night to yourself in the recording.
Okay. I got to go to bed now. Good night.
Isn't she cute? Good night, Carrie Boo. I love you. Sleep well.